Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Cambridge is right, this sort of thing.
What's it like? Condicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with me, Matt Bentman.
And me, Alan Alder.
And today we look at some newcomers to the Cambridge area food scene and we go back to the past, to a time when we ate things differently.
How does Weetabix spread with fish paste sound? Or poached egg on shredded wheat? Well, you may be surprised to learn that many products have changed their serving suggestion or market position since their invention.
Meanwhile, the newly invented Scott's All Day opened a couple of weeks ago in Mill Road and is already building a following.
We've had people coming in for brunch and then coming in for sourdough pizza at night time because they enjoyed it so much. So that was really, really nice to get that. And people that came for brunch last week came again this week. So. Yeah.
Tradizione has a good reputation on Mill Road and it just opened a branch several times bigger in Cherry Hinton Road, much to the chef's delight.
This coming Saturday, we have 60 people booked. We cannot do in the other place.
Yeah.
Here we can do it. I'm so happy to have this place.
Great to have the freedom.
Yeah.
The dumpling tree has moved from Homerton Road to Pern Road.
I always say to the kitchen, I said, if you can't taste this, don't put it in. Everything has got to enhance that rather than cancel it out.
And a new vineyard is open for tours, tastings and sales near Saffron Walden.
And the one thing that you have to have is time. So it's taken us basically 7 years to establish the vines themselves. And then, of course, the production of sparkling wine, you've got a further 3 years in the bottle.
And we've also got our regular features, what's tweeting, what's free to eat, and the local food news. Opposite the Mill Road Butchers, a new place has opened after a lengthy refurbishment. It's called Scott's All Day. It's light, airy, stylish and friendly. I went in and found myself talking to Scott. Scott, congratulations on opening up your own cafe. Does Mill Road need another cafe?
Well, I think there is definitely space in the landscape for what we're trying to do here. We're very much an all-day affair, so you start in the morning for brunch and then lunch and then sourdough pizza in the evenings, kind of going for a kind of very high standard of food and high quality of ingredients, and kind of just doing a little bit of a different brunch than what you can find on the road as well. Soon we're doing more of a filling brunch, I'd say, so you can get a full English breakfast, so to speak, which uses all Mill Road Butchers ingredients. And some kind of Middle Eastern dishes like a shakshuka, which has poached eggs in, and kind of going back to some American roots, a sausage patty and a muffin. We were very, very busy this weekend. It was very, very fun, very good feedback and positive. So.
Yeah, because you've only been open a couple of weeks or so, haven't you?
Yeah, so it was our third weekend and second week of trade. So to see that kind of level of busyness was very, very promising.
And was it because it's a bank holiday weekend or is it because the bridge is now open?
Well, I'd probably say it's a bit of a combination of the both, really. This week we're busier on Monday than on Sunday, I think, because people were waiting till Monday to get their kind of go-out breakfast.
You're standing out from the rest by the sorts of things which are on the menu, but also the quality of the ingredients.
I believe so, yeah. We're going for a very, very high quality brunch and everything's made in-house, including the beans that are on the breakfasts. Everything is very well sourced. So the black pudding comes from the Fruit Pig Company and they make some of the best black pudding I think you can possibly get. And all of the vegetables come from a very good veg supplier, Cambridge-based, Caelan Dampson, and then we're using the butchers for kind of the rest of it. And the bread comes from Fitzbillies Bakery. So.
Oh, right. And I noticed that one of your pizzas is a Culinaris pizza, so presumably you've got some things from Culinaris in
there.
Yeah,
so that's... Between that and the Mill Road Butchers, they're the most popular pizzas. So the Culinaris has Mangalica, which is a Hungarian kind of chorizo, and Andouille, which is a raw pork. It's very spicy as well. And they are kind of the standout pizzas that people, they see the names and they're just drawn to them immediately. So I think I should go and get kind of the Sol Plaza pizza. And
but the beers, are they local?
Yes, we've actually teamed up with Calvalese. So they have sole responsibility of our keg lines, and we'll always have a lager on, and then we'll have a kind of rotating keg as well. So at the moment we have got a pale ale, and that, as we go into winter, we might get a kind of a brown ale or saisons or kind of whatever they're brewing, which is kind of special, we'll get a keg of as well.
Yeah, did you choose them because they are so local, or did you do thorough testing?
Well, I did a lot of testing, and also I really like the Calverley brothers themselves. They're very nice people, and I really wanted to get their beer on tap. I thought it's the freshest kind of beer you could get on tap, really. So
yeah, they do great beers, I think.
Yeah,
they're great. Huh? Well, I was thinking that setting up a new business must be quite challenging. I mean, for example, just getting staff at these aren't the easiest times for getting people, I would have thought.
No, not at all. We did a kind of big hiring session, an open interview where I got the majority of the people from. It's good to get them in that environment to start off with and just see how they react to other people and how they kind of pronounce themselves and how they just get on with other people as well, which obviously we're going for, as well as having a very good menu and really good ingredients, we also want to be extremely friendly and welcoming, which when I'm on the floor I obviously do because it's part of me, but you want to make sure that the people you get can also be that person. But we have had a few people come and go already, but I think we're getting to a good kind of core team now. My wife's actually going to come and start working here next week.
Well, she might be difficult to get rid of.
Yeah.
So, all right. But also the financing, because you've done a lot of work here, haven't you, on the building?
We've completely stripped it out.
And it took quite a long time.
Yeah, it took about 3 months. I was expecting a 2-month renovation period. It ended up being 3, just because there was a lot of structural work. The inners, when you start knocking it about, you uncover, you know, past nightmare, so to speak. We did manage to, you know, resolve everything in the end, and we've managed to make this really open, beautiful, airy space, I think.
Yeah, I must say it is very nicely done. And the windows, which I know that you sort of talk about on your website.
It's a good problem to have, having too much sunlight, but I mean it is very warm in there at the moment. But I'm really looking forward to autumn and winter when it gets a bit dark outside earlier and people really be able to see inside as they're walking down the street.
But when you're starting up a business and you've got all the expense of doing the refurbishment of the building, buying in the ovens and so on, hiring people who can't be paid immediately, how does it feel? I mean, do you, and especially if the building works drag on, how does it make you feel? Do you start feeling tense?
Very anxious and very tense. It's not obviously all of my money, it's my family's money as well, and the other investors as well, but having seen the road, the reason we chose this spot is because it's a busy crossroads and we know that it's going to have the footfall in order to fill the space, which should generate enough money to start paying that back. We hope it does anyway.
Yeah.
But no, and also having a lot of experience working in restaurants and just seeing over time, as long as you do everything that you say you're going to do, and then you should get people to come back.
And are you getting people to come back, or is it too soon to know?
No, we've already, especially on the weekends, we've had people coming in for brunch and then coming in for sourdough pizza at night time because they enjoyed it so much. So that was really, really nice to get that. And people that came for brunch last week came again this week. So,
yeah. So is the anxiety starting to dissipate now?
No.
Oh, right.
No, I'm sure it will do soon. We're still in the very, very early phase and just, you know, still in the summer climate, so the students haven't come back yet. A lot of people are still on holiday. It's red hot outside and a lot of people just don't want to go out for lunch when it's 32 degrees.
Yeah, it's a good place to come because it is air conditioned, isn't it?
That's
it's a
true.
Nice temperature in here.
Yeah, that is very true.
And you've worked previously at Fitzbillies, so have you learned stuff from Fitzbillies that you're applying here, do you think?
I think that the main thing that I learned from Fitzbillies is just about kind of the pace of service, really, and how to get the food on the table as quickly as possible, because when you have 80 people sit down at a very short space of time, people always expect to get their breakfast within 20 minutes to half an hour, and it doesn't matter if it's busy or not, you're providing a service and you need to be able to do that. So having worked alongside the chefs there, I was able to bring some of that into here.
But you've also worked, you were saying, in Vancouver and New York, and I would have thought in particular the pace in New York was pretty unforgiving.
Yeah, non-stop. I worked in a place called in Vancouver in Gastown, so it's a very touristy area. I worked in a barbecue restaurant, and from the moment we opened the doors, we were just busy all day long there. So that definitely brought some of that back. But the main thing I actually brought back from working over there is just, again, the level of customer service, because it is just so much more slicker and friendlier than what we get over here.
Okay, I haven't asked you about wine, actually, because you are providing wine, aren't you? Who's your supplier for that?
So we're using a couple of local people. So one of them is James Thorne. He used to work at Cambridge Wine Merchants. So he supplies probably 85% of the list. And then we get a couple of wines from Cambridge Wine Merchants. And then the rest of them comes from our spirit supplier, Amethyst.
Okay, and bread is from Fitzbillies?
Bread is from Fitzbillies Bakery, yep. So we get the sourdough in every day. It's proofed for a full day before we get it, so it's really kind of, it's got a really earthy, nice flavour.
Yeah, and I noticed that your coffee comes from Caravan.
There was a big conversation we had about the coffee and, you know, where we wanted to go with it and what we were going to get and who we were going to use. So in the end, we just did a blind testing, and we tested a Cambridge roaster, two London roasters, and then a country roaster, and Caravan just was the nicest on the blind test, so that's what we went for.
That's who Joe Krajinska used at Afternoon Teas, was it?
Yes.
I mean, she didn't only use Caravan.
She actually told Simon about us opening, so Simon's their business development manager. He came and spoke to us and was very friendly, and we already liked Caravan as a brand, and the coffee was really nice. Everyone that knows what it is from going to London, so it was a good, and also it's a little bit different to what everyone else is using in the area as well, so that was a nice thing to have.
Of all the things that are on the menu, have you got a personal favourite or something you're most proud of?
I think the sausage muffin meal is really, really one of my favourites.
So what do you get in a sausage? I can picture the muffin and the sausage, when you say meal, it's implying there's a bit more than that.
At the moment it comes with beans, house-made meaty beans. So we're in one of the lunch dishes, we slow roast pork shoulder overnight, and we're using some of the fat from that into the beans, so it gives it an extra bit of a body. And then we're going to have hash brown bites on, hopefully by the end of the week. So it'll come with beans, hash brown bites, and the sausage muffin, which is a Cumberland sausage patty from Mill Road Butchers, Emmental cheese, a fried egg, and then the English muffin.
Right, that's a pretty big bite.
Yes.
Okay, tell me what hours you're open. You're open every day, presumably.
So we're open every day. We also, one thing that we haven't really spoken about are the sourdough pizzas. So we've got a really big Italian pizza oven, a Murano rotating base, huge, huge behemoth of a pizza oven. And we're doing sourdough pizzas in that. And at the moment, we're just doing them 5 nights a week, Wednesday to Sunday. But the rest of the cafe is open 7 days a week. So normal hours, Monday, Tuesday, 8 till 5, and Wednesday, Sunday, 8 until 10. But that will be changing soon. We're going to start doing Monday and Tuesday nights once we...
As more students are back and...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we actually had the guys from Van der Lyle coming in asking if we can be open Monday nights so they can come and enjoy pizza.
Well, that's praise, isn't it? That's praise. Well done. Right, thanks very much, Scott.
Thank you. Good luck
to you as
Cheers.
Well.
And that was Scott's All Day, new and good in Mill Road, opposite the Mill Road Butchers. And how nice of Alex and Lawrence of Van der Lyle to say that. A really great feeling of community there.
Yeah. I'm free. I'm free. Here's news of free food available now Saturday in Cambridge. You can find this information on the Olio app. If you're listening to a repeat or to the podcast, check the Olio app for what's currently available. The app is free to download.
Yes, and looking at it today, Rachel has a box of mango and lychee green tea to give away. Now, they expired last November, but if you leave them to stew for a little bit longer, according to Rachel, they should taste just fine. Now, she lives down by the junction where Cherry Hinton Road meets Hills Road. And also, here's a good thing, Pret A Manger are advertising on Olio for food waste heroes. Now, specifically, they want a squad captain who can lead the team of local heroes and supervise collections around the city of Pret sandwiches, baguettes, and so on that can be collected free from these collection points, you know, rather than going to waste at the end of the day. Now, this is a really great cause. Everybody wins. And if you'd like to take part yourself, you can simply click on their email link in the advert on the Earlier app.
And a reminder that some food outlets in and around Cambridge sell any unsold goods they have shortly before they close at great reductions using the Too Good To Miss app. It's also free to download.
Now, 5 years ago, an Italian pizzeria opened up on Mill Road to great acclaim. It's called Tradizione. It's still going strong today, so strong in fact that they have just opened a second venue in the city with a much larger premises, a much larger kitchen, and a great chef in owner-manager Andrea Scaramuccia. When I came through the doors, I was hit by a very strong smell of basil, fresh basil. That was you cutting up.
Yeah. For our tomato sauce. Because the tomato sauce is the only sauce we used to cook just for 2 or 3 hours. Ragu bolognese, we cooked for 8 hours. So it's low cooked and the smell is all around the restaurant. So we do also, because when you smell that kind of sauce, you say, oh, I'm hungry. And you order a lot of food. I'm joking, of course.
Two friends of mine came to you a fortnight ago. They told me that the food was so good, the service was exceptional, and they just had nothing but good things to say about this. And I didn't know that you had moved into the Sorrento Hotel here on Cherry Hinton Road. So I thought, well, we need to champion this. We need to tell people.
Thank you very much. It's much, much, much appreciated. You know what? The first restaurant has been tough. But opening the second one is much tougher. We opened 1 month ago, roughly. Here we have 60 seats, in the Mill Road one we have only 24.
One thing I always love is how people get to know each other, because it's the smallest city in England, I think.
Yeah.
And I just love how everybody gets to know everybody. I appreciate that networking, and I hope it's something that we put across on radio, because it's nice. It feels like a little family in a way to me.
Exactly. Yeah,
and
it's true.
Like one of the things I noticed on your menu, in the drinks particularly, you mentioned Calvary's Brewery. You're friends with Calvary's Brewery.
Yeah. Carver's Brewery, so we do Italian food, we sell Italian beers, but we also would like to cooperate with the community. So when we knew that the Carver's Brewery wanted to expand their business, we said, why not?
Yes.
Honestly, they go very, very well. The beers sell themselves.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows Carver's Brewery, and it's a local beer, local guys, so it's very good. And now, here at the Sorrento Hotel, probably 99% we are going to put the draft beer. Because in Mill Road we just sell bottles. But here we probably could sell draft beer from them. Absolutely delicious.
Your description of your first place on Mill Road, I remember you saying, in Italy, a pizzeria is a pizzeria. You go there for pizza. You chose to have pizza and pasta because you felt it was important for the British palate. You know, people like to have pasta. And I think you also said it would be nice to be able to do four-course meals, which is exactly what this place is about.
Exactly. The kitchen here at the Sorrento Hotel is 3 times bigger than the kitchen in the Mill Road one. So now we are experimenting new menus. We do fish, we do meat. One important thing that we use just fresh fish. If you want to have a special dish for you, you call us 1 day in advance, we prepare a fresh, just tailor-made for you. New concept, it's different from Miro.
Everything you serve is fresh, the sauces are fresh, the pasta is fresh, everything is homemade, it's made on site. There's 16 pizzas to choose from on your menu. Ortolana, tomato, mozzarella, courgette, aubergine and broccoli.
This one is one of the most popular pizza we have. English people like the vegetable, like broccoli, so it sells itself, honestly. Also, we have the primavera, rocket, cherry tomato and fresh mozzarella on top. You know, when you do everything fresh, sometimes when you go to the restaurant, you say, it looks nice, but can we find fresh broccoli, or they are using the frozen one, the vegetable from the tin? In this case, it's a different experience from us to other venues. Maybe you don't like our food, but for sure you cannot say that it's not fresh.
Yeah.
Honestly, since we have opened, we have seen the business growing and growing and growing, but the most important thing is the interaction with the customers. Most of them coming 2-3 times a week, so we are friends of them now. When you come to eat with me, It's something I say, oh, like if we go to a pub, having a beer and chat, you come to me, we having a beer, we chat, and you also eat something. That's it. Easy.
Now, you do have several desserts, and I wanted to pick out just a few to kind of wet the whistle of the listener, as it were. A salami a
chocolato.
Chocolato, yes. Dark chocolate, hazelnuts, and broken biscuits.
This one is my wife's dessert. She only person allowed to prepare it. I try to prepare sometimes, but I don't know. It doesn't come as good as her salami al cioccolato. This is the dessert my granny made for me every Sunday. In Italy, we don't used to go out for a Sunday lunch, but it's a family reunion at home. And my granny always prepared dessert, and I ate tons and tons of it. So every time that I see one customer taking the salami al cioccolato, oh, I'm so happy because I remember my granny.
And now you've married a woman who makes the best one.
Exactly, it's fantastic, it's fantastic. Because again, she did the salami al cioccolato exactly like my granny did. Oh. I cannot do it, I don't know why. It's easy, it's not difficult to do. Hmm. But I cannot do as her do. It's very, very good. But also the tiramisu. And as you can imagine, everybody do the tiramisu in different way.
Yes.
Now I'm forced to do it because our customer love it. One time one chef said, I tried to do it, but he didn't do it in the same way of me. So I said, okay, I do it. It's my punishment.
So we're on 196 Cherry Hinton Road. Is this quite a strong Italian part of town?
I tell you this. Yesterday night, we were full.
Yeah.
There was a table of English people. They stopped me and said, how can you do? I said, what? All tables are Italian people, in every table. I said, yes. Basically, this area is like a little Italy.
Yeah.
We are roughly 60,000 people in Cambridge.
The reason I mentioned that was because when you see a lot of Italian people going to an Italian restaurant, that is a sign that it is a good quality restaurant. So it's a good sign for us English people to know this is a quality place.
Exactly. That's the lady yesterday, that's what she wanted to say. Mm. When I see the Italian people and I see that the English people recognize Italian people, I'm so happy, honestly. It's very, very good for me.
The place in Italy where you're from is Viterbo.
Viterbo,
is that right? Now, Viterbo, I think to the north you have Tuscany, to the south you have the Rome. City of Rome.
Yeah, we are in between Rome and Tuscany and Umbria. So I talk a lot of influence from Tuscany, from Umbria, but also from Rome. The carbonara is typical from Rome. We do the amatriciana, that is from Amatrice, is Umbria. We have a lot of wine from Tuscany. And also, for example, in November, there will be an Italian chef, a Tuscan chef, coming here for 2 days. We will do an event, just Tuscan cuisine, for 2 days.
Andrea Scaramuccia, did I say that right?
Perfect, perfect, yes. Absolutely perfect.
Lovely to meet you. And we are here at 196 Cherry Hinton
Road,
the Sorrento Hotel, which is now paired with Tradizione Restaurant.
Exactly, thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Thank you.
And you're listening to Flavor on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Well, that two-day Tuscan cuisine event does sound rather good.
Yes, and you can follow Andrea and keep up with notifications on his new restaurant via website tradizionerestaurant.com. Tradizione has an I at the end. And of course, his Mill Road branch is still going great guns. And as his card says, Tradizione, two restaurants, same passion.
Now we go back to the past. With the school holidays almost over, there's just about time for a family outing to the Museum of Brands in London's Notting Hill. But if you haven't got time, Andrew Webb has been there for you.
How does Weetabix spread with fish paste sound? Or poached egg on shredded wheat? Well, you may be surprised to learn that many products have changed their serving suggestion or market position since their invention. Pay a visit to the excellent Museum of Brands in London's Notting Hill, and you'll see a carton of Weetabix from the 1930s advising you to serve said biscuits with milk, jam or cheese. The idea of putting a slice of cheese on a Weetabix and having it as a snack or for supper may seem crazy nowadays, but back then, products like this, and there were a number of them, were intended almost as long-life bread replacements. I actually tried this serving suggestion out, and while not totally unpleasant, it wasn't particularly tasty. But cheese wasn't the only topping. There's an advert from the 1920s that suggests spreading with jam, marmalade, fish or meat paste, or even sardines. Try that with the kids at breakfast. Another product that's changed over the years is Lucozade. If you're a child of the 60s or 70s, you knew you were really poorly when Mum got the Lucozade in. Invented in 1927 by Geordie chemist William Owing, and originally called Glucozade, it was originally designed to aid recovery of people with colds and illnesses. In 1929, it dropped the G, becoming Lucozade, and was even dispensed in hospitals to the sick. Then in 1983, everything changed, and the iconic cellophane yellow wrapper was ditched, and the drink repositioned as a sports drink, rather than an illness recovery drink. AIDS recovery became Replaces Lost Energy. This move was spearheaded by one of the greatest adverts of all time. It featured Olympic decathlon gold medalist Daley Thompson training to the heavy riffs of Iron Maiden's Phantom of the Opera and then refreshing himself with Lucozade. What's more, the voiceover at the end is none other than legendary sports commentator Des Lynam. You can't get more sport than that. This move remains perhaps the greatest brand repositioning ever, creating a whole new market section that later gave rise to Red Bull, Powerade and NRG, which a friend of mine once pronounced NERG. Kedgeree is another product that's totally changed. The roots of kedgeree lie in the Indian dish of khichdi, which is made with rice and lentils, flavoured and coloured with turmeric, and mostly eaten for breakfast. In 1845, Eliza Acton, who never actually went to India, published a recipe that not only featured cayenne instead of turmeric, but also had eggs cracked into it. And it is she who is responsible for the inclusion of haddock, a fish not exactly plentiful in the Bay of Bengal. David Burton, author of The Raj at Table, explains that smoked Scottish haddock was becoming more available nationally at this time, and so we were subsequently added to the dish here. Mrs. Beaton only ever used mustard as her heat-giving condiment, which is odd given that curry powder appears elsewhere in her eponymous tome. Over the years, all sorts of things have been added, from peas to hard-boiled eggs to mango chutney. So it's an Indian dish that's now made with totally different British ingredients that was once eaten for breakfast, but now is more likely to be eaten for supper. Clear? Good. Though a few decades older than Weetabix, shredded wheat was also intended as a bread substitute, and it too was promoted with a variety of toppings and serving suggestions. Adverts from the 1900s encouraged housewives to split them and toast them under a grill before topping with fruit, or even a poached egg. Again, in the name of research, I actually tried this combination for a recent Radio 4 documentary, and I can tell you that it's not particularly nice, and far too dry. This, it goes with anything for a dried biscuity cereal product, sounds bonkers these days, right? Well, the latest Ryvita ad is exactly that. Yogurt was once the foodstuff of traditional Greek farmers and those with an intimate love of dairy animals. It was only ever eaten in this country by health-conscious hippies in the 1960s. You'll find no trace of it in the likes of Mrs. Beaton, or right up to Dorothy Hartley in the 1950s. Historically, a soured milk product in Britain was called a wig, or a whey wig, sometimes flavoured with herbs such as mint or sage, and even then normally consumed as a drink. But even this use had pretty much died out by the end of the 19th century. Then, in 1963, Skyr yoghurt was launched, which saw masses of fruit and sugar added to natural yoghurt and single-handedly create a whole supermarket sector overnight. Of course, now that sugar's in the spotlight, we are, in some cases at least, returning to natural or Greek-style yoghurts once more. Georgian physician and health farm entrepreneur William Oliver extolled the virtues of drinking Bath's waters. He also invented the Bath bun, made with a sweetish dough and often containing caraway seeds. His patients, however, enjoyed his buns rather too much, so he invented the Bath Oliver, made from flour, milk, butter, malt and hops. It was a light, easy-to-digest biscuit, and helped some of his more portly patients slim down. They were, in their way, the original Ryvita. They're still available, although now more like to be topped with a big slab of cheese. Huntley and Palmer's, biscuitiers to the rich and famous, even do a chocolate-coated one, which they describe as the ultimate biscuit indulgence, which is probably not what Dr. Oliver had in mind. Another product of empire, tonic water, was a way to make quinine a touch more palatable. From the 17th century until the 1940s, quinine was the only anti-malarial medicine available, and British staff stationed in tropical regions where malaria was rife began mixing the bitter bark extract with soda water. These original medicinal tonics contain large amounts of quinine, some 500 to 1,000 milligrams, whereas the quinine in your average G&T today is about 80 milligrams. They're there to give the unique bitter flavour, so what started off as a medicine soon became a mixer. An equivalent today would be for Cavornia cough syrups to bring out a cocktail. So where does all this leave us? Well, products are constantly evolving, and what seems clear-cut right now might not be so in the future. Today's products, like ice cream, are always sweet, but there are those tinkering at the edges with more savoury flavours, like Parmesan, which is great slightly melted with ham and melon on a hot day, or even chilli, that goes great with tiger prawns. And just a few years ago, salted caramel would have sounded ridiculous, and now it's hard to find unsalted caramel. So what products do you think will change their serving suggestions in the years to come? In the meantime, I'm off for a Baff Oliver and a glass of Lucozade.
Now there's a combination. So, any thoughts on changes to serving suggestions? A friend of mine was once having breakfast in a hotel where a lot of visitors from China, and it was the usual buffet-style breakfast where you help yourself from a vast range of different things. And he said that a number of the guests took some cornflakes and, well, not being certain of what you do with them, took some bread and made them into a sandwich. So, a new serving suggestion is born.
And there's the familiar music signalling time for the latest food tweets from the city for today, Saturday.
Calverley's Brewery has tweeted they've got food at the brewery in Hooper Street from the Cook's Nest until 9 o'clock tonight. The Brew Board's tap room in Harston is open from 2 o'clock till 6 o'clock today, and from next Saturday the hours will be 4 till 8pm throughout the autumn. Finally, Bushelbox Farm has tweeted to say it's carrot cake weekend in their cafe in Station Road, Willingham, and also on the menu is raspberry chocolate mousse and almond macaroons, which are dairy-free.
Ah, lovely. And don't forget that you can keep up with what we're tweeting by following us at Flavour 105. Now, Laura Truman has been part of the Cambridge food scene for many years. She began with Zhonghua Chinese food, and after 2 years of successful trading, she moved on to open the Dumpling Tree on Homerton Street. Well, now, she's just opened her latest venture on Pern Road, and she's keeping the Dumpling Tree name for this new place, and it is a big place, and dumplings are a big feature.
If I did a restaurant, it would have to be a small place selling homemade dumplings. Because I think that then all the restaurants seem to sell Chinese restaurants more or less the same thing.
Mm.
That's what I thought. I would need to bring something fresh, nutritious, and easy to make. So dumpling, I think, fits the bill. That's why Zhonghua started.
Prior to me coming here, I was just looking up articles about food trends in Cambridge and so on. And there's plenty about the proliferation of Chinese restaurants in Cambridge over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And I felt so cliché to come along and ask you to almost lead in with something like that. Straight away, you navigated around that by telling me that yours was, let's see what happens with Zhonghua. And I think that's so brave.
Brave or ignorance. Because a lot of people say, how long have you been doing this? I said, we just started. My God, you're brave. Even if you haven't got this background, but you do have passion for food. I cook a lot myself. I don't buy any ready-made food. I just like to let people share and see whether people appreciate it. And so many people have been to China. They have seen these things in the streets, eating food, and they said, oh yeah, we were there in Beijing eating the same food.
You didn't start out in the food business.
No, no. My background is teaching. I taught English as a foreign language. Then I used to do a lot of entertaining at home, and people seem to enjoy it. Now everybody said, why didn't you start a little restaurant? But it's such an adventure, you know, you never get round to it. But eventually I thought, if I don't do this, I will never get it on my system. But, you know, it's amazing, you know, the support and appreciation come from the public, especially the student community.
I'm always concerned about the feeling of doing something that you love. I love doing radio, and the reason I love doing the food program is because I always want to get a person's story across, because the listener cannot see the food or smell the food, so there must be another reason why they're listening, and I always feel that it's to be able to get your passion across, just the feeling of when your business took off.
You have to go, yes, I must have done something right, you know. I feel like everything I do it, I need to taste it. It's not just for commercial purpose. It's just that you want people to try, you know, to realise, you know, this is something good. And then once you've got that reaction, you feel like it's worth doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth doing. I come from southwest, the Yunnan province, which has got a lot to offer food-wise. Mm. You know, China is a country with a lot of ethnic groups. In Yunnan, we got 26 of them. Mm. Each group got their own culture, their cuisine. And these people, they kind of rely on the land much more than us. You know, we buy things from the shop. They actually just pick things fresh from the land. One of the specialities in Yunnan is the rice noodle soups.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a speciality of the dumpling tree. Cross-bridge rice noodles, a meal that you construct yourself. Their signature dish, very popular.
It comes with three parts. A bowl of chicken broth, mm-hmm. rice noodles.
Yeah.
Then you got a raw meat plate, which is kind of prawn, ham. And then you have a variety of meat and vegetables. According to the time it needs to be cooked, you put them in order. So by the time you add everything together, everything cooked just right. So when this is brought out to the table, it was boiling hot.
Yeah.
Add your first plate in. By the time the prawn is done, add your second plate. It's very interesting, people put it in and then as if they made it themselves. And yeah. Also, each ingredient gives different flavor and texture and color.
And that's what you can have here.
That's what you can have here. And yeah. Also, because we have so many people go vegetarian, we also developed a vegetarian version. Even a lot of vegetarians, they haven't had a lot of Chinese vegetarian ingredients. We put it there. You know, we have tofu ribbons, we have egg ribbons, we have dried lily flower, fungi, and also a vegetable broth. Plenty of choice here. It's about one third of our menu is vegetarian. It's such a simple idea. Every ingredient is plain to see. It's not covered with sauces and flavoring. I think these days people want something good, plain and simple. It's just when you start doing things, your expectation, your standard, everything keep making improvement. You want a better place. We are in Cambridge, England. I think we needed to combine the popular pub culture with the food. It took me nearly a year to have this place done up.
To anybody who doesn't know or who perhaps hasn't been, both Zhonghua and the Dumpling Tree on Homerton Street were much smaller affairs than this.
Oh, yes.
I think you could describe them as cafe-style
That's
shops.
Right. Yes, yeah. Yes. No frill. But here, it's people will have be offered a lot more choices with even more authentic cuisines.
It's such a large venue. This place seats 100 customers?
200. So it's very good for events, weddings.
Several years ago, shortly after you opened Zhonghua, you featured in The Guardian's top 10 good and cheap places to eat in Cambridge.
Yes. Yeah. Also, when I took over Homerton Street, we've been on Good Food Guide for 4 years running.
Okay.
Very, very rewarding. And recently we had an article written for us, Sunday Mail.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as it's published, people just came in to say, you're going to be busy today. Yunnan food is mainly less seasoning, less sauces.
Mm.
You can taste the food as it is. I think people like that these days. We don't deep fry or fry things too much, even stir fry. Mm. We are very conscious how much oil we put in. And then also we make all the sauces ourselves, chili oil, everything. But people can taste it. It's different from what you can buy because you got your own character in it. Yunnan is a huge province. Its territory is just as big as the whole of France. It's full of character because the geographical position. It's very high. Most places are very high in altitude.
Yes.
The way we live is about 2,000 meters above the sea level.
Mm.
And a lot of places, it's like at the foot of the mountain, it's really hot. And at the top of the mountain, you've got the glacier. So they say you can experience four seasons within a day. We call it vertical weather.
Mm.
In that kind of a climate, you know, you have so many different plants and vegetables. Yunnan is famous for their mushrooms. So many varieties of mushrooms, and which we do have in some dishes.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, the ingredients we use is quite different from the mainstream Chinese restaurant.
From a very Luddite's view, my view, I've been in love for years with the steamed dumplings, these beautiful fluffy clouds on the outside, with their savory meat on the inside.
Yeah, yes.
And it's so sweet, gravy-like almost.
Yes, yeah. Yes, we sell a lot. It's typical dish is the char siu bao. Steamed bread, and the inside is filled with barbecue pork. It's got this honey roast flavor, salty and sweet at the same time, with its own juice, and it's all wrapped in a parcel. Because when we were pupils in school, you always have this steamer by the gate of your school gate, and you just come out and get one.
Yeah.
You don't need a plate. Everything in a parcel. People come in, they all know this. cha-shao-bao, they would say. And even dumplings as well, we develop new fillings. This time, in time for our opening, we develop another two vegetable filling dumplings with pinto beans and sauerkraut. Mm. It does give you, you know, a very quirky mixture.
Yeah.
And then we also have dumplings with tofu, sun-dried tomatoes, and green beans. So when you have dumplings, it's like a balanced meal. And with a little bit dipping, just give you the nice finish. Yeah, this one is also a typical Yunnan, pan-fried cheese.
Pan-fried, freshly made cheese.
Yeah, we make it every day. We make a little batch.
Oh, beautiful.
The closest we can compare with is halloumi, but it tastes different from halloumi. Halloumi is a bit salty, but this one is very milky, very fresh. And it was sold out yesterday, and now I made another batch. It takes a day to make because it needs to be pressed, you know, curdled and pressed. This is typical Yunnan because in China, most people don't eat dairy. Only people from Yunnan, they have this kind of thing. So I think there's so many things to explore. I'm here, I feel like, you know, I'm just here just to give them a little bit of feeling of going to a far away place. Every time I go, I feel like, you know, I'm enlightened, food-wise, culture-wise, yes.
That's lovely. Well, thank you very much, Laura. We are here at the Dumpling Tree, which is 56 Pern Road. If people want to find out more about your menu, they can check online. It's thedumplingtree.com.
Thedumplingtree.com, yes.
So
welcome, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And many thanks to Laura Truman, the owner of The Dumpling Tree.
Yes, and Laura assured me that there will be plenty more developments happening there over the course of the next year or so, including a Chinese cocktail bar and a lovely Chinese garden to eat in. There's stacks of free parking there because it is such a large site, and I thought it was important to mention that because obviously parking is so very tricky in Cambridge. And you can also see all the food being made on site. They have a dumpling workshop where you can see your dumplings being made for you.
There's a new vineyard in production near Saffron Walden, run by Paul Edwards. It's called Saffron Grange Vineyard. Sue Bailey went to investigate and wondered why that particular site was chosen for the vineyard.
Well, that actually is a very good question, because we spent quite some time looking at various different locations across the country. And Saffron Walden really came about because we discovered that the chalk seams that are across the south of England and actually in northern France, which support the wine that we're focusing on, were present and very available here in Saffron Walden. And actually, those seams of chalk come to the surface here in Saffron Walden, and they're evident for everybody to see. That proximity to the surface, plus the location and the climate, and indeed the local people who work here and its proximity to Cambridge, made it look very attractive. And so we started the journey of planting different vines to see how they would grow. And you know, because the climate has been changing, it's almost as though we've got the coming together of the location, the climate, the local interest and the community in what we're doing. And so I can very, very happily say to you that we think we're at the beginning now of what could be a very, very interesting change in the landscape.
And you are specialising in sparkling wines.
I guess the history of wine in the UK really has only been here for sort of 50 years. And in those early years, everybody was trying to grow wine that was still in nature, and it was quite difficult. And some of the pioneers today are realising just how the climate has changed. But the reality for us all is that we are at a latitude and our climate is rather northerly. So we can grow very successfully today grapes that will grow in a cooler climate. So you'll often hear the expression cool climate vineyards and cool climate grapes. Well, we're in a cooler climate, but it's ever getting warmer.
And you have three wines at the moment?
Yeah, we're only just on the market because it takes a long time to plant a vineyard, which is what I chose to do. The time it takes is you've got to grow the vines first, And you've got to make sure that you've got the right clones of vines. So our vines, which are Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier and Chardonnay, plus Pinot Gris and Sauval Blanc, those you need to understand how they can thrive. And you need to plan out how you're setting out your vineyard. There's a very complex, time-consuming process. And the one thing that you have to have is time. So it's taken us basically 7 years to establish the vines themselves. And then, of course, the production of sparkling wine, you've got a further 3 years in the bottle and in terms of getting the fermentation to produce the right taste you want achieved. So it takes a long time.
And in terms of size?
40 acres of land. It's on a slope. It's a beautiful slope, which is a southeasterly facing slope. When we had it all, the soil tested and analysed, we had the right topography, which meant that we weren't in too much of a frost zone. We needed to make sure we planted trees to give us some shelter, because this was, after all, just agricultural land, and it was growing previously cereal crops. So we converted it, and now the landscape's completely different. It's like anything. What you do is you plant them, see how they grow, and then say, well, this particular variety or clone of a Pinot Noir or a Chardonnay does better in this climate. And you say, oh, we'll plant more of those. So what we've done is, over the years, we have planted as though we're planting a bottle of sparkling wine. And a bottle of sparkling wine for us means 50% of the grapes would be Pinot Noir, 15% of them another one called Pinot Meunier, which are red or black grapes, and 35% is Chardonnay. So we've almost planted our future. This year is the first year of launch. This is our 2016 harvest that we've been tasting here today, and that's what we now have on sale. So currently on our range we have three. We have a single grape variety called Sauval Blanc. We have our Cuvée, which is the more complex. It's a combination of the three grapes. And we have a Rosé, which is also a combination of the three grapes, including Sauval Blanc. And those three are our current 2016-17 portfolio. The most pride that we have is where we have focused most of our attention, which is the Cuvée.
And your symbol for the wines is this amazing woolly mammoth with grapes in his tusk, and he has a name.
What we discovered was that in the local museum there were the tusks of a woolly mammoth, and we also discovered that the stream at the bottom of our premises, which is a little river, it was originally a river, but it's called the Slade, and in the Slade between Rowley Hill Farm, which is where we are today, and Audley End, were found the remains of the mammoth and another woolly rhinoceros and other things. So that really excited me, because I could imagine that sometime in the past there were these wonderful creatures, 11 foot high, who were parading through the land, sweeping through the snow to expose the grass. And here we are today, having gone through all the generational change of history, and I thought we would reinvigorate the concept and the idea that these slopes once supported, and we know they did, mammoths roaming wildly. And I had this imagination of them roaming through a vineyard 40,000 years ago.
So you are open for people to come and do tours with you during the week or at weekends only?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the moment we're focusing mainly on the weekend, when most people seem to want to come in. But we will be expanding our... So on our website you can book a slot to come and visit the vineyard, and we'll give you a comprehensive tour and tell you what we're doing, how we're doing it, and then you can taste our wines and hopefully you can engage with us, because what we're trying to do is really develop the local community to really believing that we could have hill slopes covered in vines in the future, particularly with the climate as it's changing. What we can see today is more like a vineyard in Italy or the south of France, so it's quite interesting. We're looking forward to it.
And that was Paul Edwards, and Saffron Grange Vineyard is open for tours and tastings. Simply check out their website for details, saffrongrange.com, and you can follow them too on Twitter and Instagram, where they'll be posting various offers. Yeah. And there's green onions signalling the start of our new section, and we begin with jobs.
Yeah, and what a lot there are. The waterman in Chesterton Road and the old bicycle shop in Regent Street are both looking for a head chef. At the waterman, the pay is up to £32,000 a year, and at the old bicycle shop, it's up to £34,000, and both roles are eligible for a bonus. There's also an assistant manager job going at the old bicycle shop. The pay is up to £28,000. And again, a bonus is available. For details of these jobs, go to the City Pubs website from which you can make your application.
There's a lot of positions available at the Ivy Brasserie in Trinity Street. The Ivy is looking for a chef, a commis chef, a chef de partie, a food runner, waiting staff and a kitchen porter. And for full details of all of these jobs and to apply online, simply go to the Ivy Brasserie website.
There are a few jobs available in Mill Road as well. The White Swan needs bar staff, apply within. And the wonderful Culinaris has full and part-time positions available. You need to have a keen interest in food and tasty things.
Little Petra is looking for front of house and kitchen staff. You can send your CV to admin@littlepetra.co.uk or you can telephone them 07513 786 650. And if you want to do some research in advance of applying, why not listen to our feature about Little Petra? It's in the podcast from the 8th of June and it's available on the Cambridge 105 Radio website.
And the last job for today, Bedouin, the North African restaurant, is recruiting food servers. Apply in person at the restaurant.
Moving on to city news now. Bushel Box Farm Shop in Station Road, Willingham, is deep into the plum season. The varieties they have vary daily, so it's worth popping along. They also have been making single variety jams, including Victoria, and the less well-known St Andrew's Gage. And if you go along at weekends, you'll find that their cafe is open too.
Next week, from Monday the 2nd to Friday the 6th, there's the 21st Histon Beer and Cider Festival at the Red Lion in Histon, with 60-ish cask ales on gravity and hand pump, an extensive selection of cider and perry and continental draft beers, and food too. There's an admission charge of 3 o'clock after 5pm, but it's free at lunchtime, and a festival glass costs a refundable £2.
Now there's some marvellous events coming up at the Cambridge Cookery in Purbeck Road, which is just off Hills Road. On the 13th of September, a familiar voice, Steve Hovington, is having a food and wine matching, and this is to mark National Wine Education Week. There are five dishes, each with a matching wine, and the one that really caught my eye was steak three ways with roast beet three ways, and that comes with a Bordeaux.
Yeah, I really like three-way dishes. Great for comparisons.
Anyway, the cost is £45, and you can book via the Cambridge Cookery website.
And the final appearance from Mark Poynton at Cambridge Cookery is on the 21st of September. It's a five-course menu and the cost is £55. Drinks will also be available to purchase. And I rather like the look of the roast duck, apricot, white bean puree and king oyster mushrooms. Mark will be making a big announcement soon and possibly on the night. I think we can guess what it will be and we're very pleased. This, by the way, is not what appears on the Cambridge Cookery website, unless it's just been changed. So you book via Mark's website, info@mjprestaurant.com.
There's a new Spanish restaurant at the Trinity Street end of Green Street and it will be open very soon. We've every reason to believe that it will be very good, so keep your eyes open for information.
And finally, with the new school year starting this week, there are lots of adult evening and day classes beginning too. We've been sent details of the ones running at Camborne, Comberton and Melbourne Village Colleges, and there are a lot of food-related ones. You can get details at combertonadulted.org, but here are, well, one or two examples to whet your appetite at. Comberton Village College, Indian cookery classic dishes, starting on the 30th of October. There are 5 weeks per term and it costs £53. Italian cookery starts on the 25th of September, four sessions for £44. North African and Middle Eastern souk food starts on the 23rd of September and that's four sessions for £44. At Camborne Village College, Nutrition for Health starts on the 23rd of September. There are eight sessions and that's £85. Pastry Sweet and Savoury starts on the 24th of September, five sessions for £67. And so it goes on. Worth looking up.
And that's all the time we have for today. We are here on alternate Saturdays at 1 p.m, repeated on Sundays at 2, and then podcast early in the next week.
Coming up on Cambridge 105 Radio today at 3 o'clock, the Eclectic Light Show, which includes Richard Thompson talking songs and the inspiration behind Fairport Convention's Legion Leaf album, recorded 50 years ago. At 5 o'clock, Polish Waves. At 6, From the Terraces. 7 o'clock until 8 o'clock, the Big Band Show. From 8 till 9, Jackie Bonds here with Let the Good Times Roll. 9 until 10, Rebel Arts Radio, views and muse from the arts on the left of centre. From 10 till 11, Stagger, play some very good new music. And from 11 until midnight, Lee Chambers is here with Bookmark. But that's all from us. Flavour will be back on the 14th of September. But until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.